Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. I'm Alex, and joining me again, as from last week, is Barbell's international editor, Bobby Manzi. How are you doing, Bobby?
Yeah, not bad yourself.
Not too bad. I mean, the sun's out, which is fucking mental for up north, but we'll take it. We'll take it. I get really nostalgic about this time of year in the football calendar because for me, it's the pressure's off. We generally seem to be really good at the end of most seasons, and that's been a trend for the last few years. This has been no exception. Palace obviously making it unbeaten in five now with the resounding win at home against Manchester United. So obviously that's going to form a lot of the basis of what we discuss. But there's plenty of news across all the teams around this club as the club hosted its annual end of seasons award. There's plenty to unpack there. We'll be looking at all things United, all things Palace, and plenty more. But unfortunately, there is one big bit of news we have to cover. This episode is going to go out a bit later than we would have liked, to be honest, with scheduling for everyone just being very difficult this week. But we're recording on the Thursday ahead of Wolves, and obviously there's a lot of news around Ducky Friedman at the moment, with the Palace sporting director looking like he's almost on the verge of joining Newcastle. So Bobby, a little bit there on Ducky Friedman we have to talk about. Obviously Palace's sporting director looking like he's fairly close to joining Newcastle. I mean, it's not confirmed yet, but we are seeing from Sky News that deals look advanced. Could you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah, so the last real update I had was on Wednesday, which was of the vein of that Dougie hasn't had an offer from Newcastle and he was still very much Palace sporting director. And it was very much the case of how would Dougie respond when an offer was put in front of him from Newcastle. Now, according to various media outlets today, apparently that offer has been put in front of him. Both sides seem to be keen to get a deal done. Now, that's what outlets are reporting. I'm none the wiser. I don't know. I genuinely don't. It's not a story I'm really chasing because I'm very much of the vein that Palace journalists will probably be the last to know to the story. There'll be the final confirmation that he's off if he is going, because if he's talking to another club, their people are going to be best informed to know that and to know how those negotiations are going, and Palace will really only start to hear it if it becomes concrete and it does become the fact that he's off. So at the minute, for me right now, it's a very much I don't know, and I'm more better placed to probably provide some analysis to the situation rather than actual knowledge.
We tried to modernise in multiple senses as a club when he came in 2017 under Frank de Boer, and obviously de Boer accompanied this promise of a much more glamorous and progressive style of football that was sustainable in the long run. Obviously, it all frankly went to shit. Let's not beat around the bush. But he very much stayed, very much has a strong affinity with Palace. But there was a lot of kind of the reaction on social media, let's just say, has been very knee-jerk. It's probably too harsh. I think a lot of people have been calling him a snake. They've been sort of slandering him, saying, oh, it's not like him to ditch us. It's been quite visceral, I think, quite raw in how fans have reacted. And I think that's a better way of summarizing it. So, he has a strong legacy here. But just talk to me about your initial reaction. Do you think people are being harsh on him, or do you think it's a justified move?
Look, I think it's really difficult for football supporters once someone's stabbed you in the back before to then trust them again. And Palace fans trusted a man who has stabbed them in the back in the past. And he's done a remarkable job in SC25. And, he's made some coups. Adam Wharton, obviously, the most recent one. Daniel Munoz. There's been so much good he's done at Palace. And he's kind of, in a sense, transformed that sporting department, the recruitment, the whole data-led model. That was him, and he's doing a brilliant job. So I won't say he's done, he's doing a brilliant job. So I think it's very difficult for Palace fans to take that, and for the prospect of him to potentially stab them in the back again after his only public interview since coming back to the club says about every day that he tries to correct his mistake of walking out and that kind of thing. So yes, I totally understand the reaction of Crystal Palace supporters on social media. But my question I then start to pose from the an analytical point of view, I said a moment ago, well, two questions actually. It is Dougie Freeman crucial to Crystal Palace Football Club? And is Dougie Freeman replaceable? Now, I think the answer to the first question of that is no, he's not crucial to Crystal Palace Football Club. And I think the second answer, is he replaceable? I think yes, he is. There's plenty of other sporting directors who run a data-led model. There's plenty of other sporting directors who can charm footballers into joining a club. There's plenty of other football directors that are good salesmen that can pitch a club. So there's replacements out there. I wouldn't be too panicked if I was a Palace fan. The job of sporting director, director of football, whatever you want to call it at Palace, is done by two people anyway. It's Dougie and another. So they just need to bring one more person in, should he go? And I don't think it's the hardest position in the world to recruit for.
No, definitely. I mean, his stock is pretty high. I think, when you look at the rebuild under Vieira, you look at more recent acquisitions, but even when you go back historically, even those flop signings, I'm thinking particularly of Alex Sernloff as a great example, someone who maybe didn't work out at Palace, but has since gone on to have a fruitful career. I mean, there's clearly some very, very strong evidence to suggest that his methods are effective. And it's no surprise, it's probably a compliment to us, if anything, that, he was previously linked with Man United and obviously now looks like Newcastle might have some legs in it. Now, obviously, I want to caveat that, as you've been doing, Bobby, by saying that, it's not a done deal. We're not going to say that it's done until it is. But, there's real strong evidence that he is of a seriously high calibre. So do you think in that sense he's replaceable, I should say?
Yeah, because you also have to look at the people around him. You know, Dougie Freeburn's not the one going out doing the early scoutings of players. You know, I heard a name this week that Palace are in the very early stages of scouting. That is a name that would get everyone very excited. But Dougie Freeman probably hasn't even seen that name yet because it's the scouting teams lower down picking out the players and then taking it to Dougie. They do their data-led analysis, whatever, and then they then choose the best course as a group. You know, it takes a genius to pick a football player out. That genius at Crystal Palace is shared amongst 10, 15, 20 people. You know, it's not just Dougie picking these hidden gems out and bringing them to the club. Dougie very much is involved in the negotiations, involved in the picking of players, sure. But it's a really difficult thing to explain because there's so many elements to a player coming to a football club. And Dougie really is that get it over the line guy. He charms the players, he speaks to the families, you know, he makes sure he sells Crystal Palace to those players. And that's what you're going to miss. So you've just got to make sure you get the recruitment right as to who you pick to replace him. Now, like we keep saying, I just want to caveat it. Generally, have no knowledge on whether Dougie is leaving the football club or not. We're just going off reports. We will see what happens.
No, definitely. I think that's a really nice summary. I think the infrastructure and the foundations that he partially did help to build are there. They're
Oh
not
yeah,
going to
no,
go
he certainly
anywhere.
built the infrastructure. You know, the data-led questioning that they do to see if a player fits Crystal Palace, all that kind of stuff. That's Dougie's brainchild, and it's fantastic. The infrastructure's there. You just need to make sure that if he goes, you get the right person to carry on that infrastructure. You get the right person to lead the data-led model. You get the right person who knows how to build a scouting team and how to direct a scouting team and what to look for and what to bring in. There's so much more to it than just one man wooing Adam Wharton to join the football club. You know, that scouting process was extensive. Dougie Freeman wasn't the main person who pushed for Adam Wharton to join Palace. It was the other sporting director X figure. And there's just so much more to it. It's not just Dougie, as I keep saying, pulling hidden gems out.
Penny for the thoughts of Steve Parish, who is now going to miss someone sitting on his other shoulder at games along with Mark Bright. But in all seriousness, I think he's a loss to the club, absolutely. But like you say, I think not irreplaceable. He's left it in a better position than he found it, and that's all we can really ask for. It is a good step for his career, but at the same time, I think I have a lot of moral reservations about going to blood-soaked money in the likes of Newcastle. But that's my own personal take. I understand that he's going to have obviously greater resources and that. For better or worse, I think that's always going to be attractive to someone in his position. So interested to see what happens there. But I mean,
If you want to look at it in that sense, you have to look at he's going to be getting paid more money than he is at Palace. He's going to have a bigger transfer budget. He's going to have, as you said, more resources. He's going to have more ambition from the club to push into the Champions League and maybe try and win something. It's a really attractive proposition for anyone looking to further their career. And it's the main job at Newcastle, whereas at Man United, he was never being offered the main job. It was going to be Ashworth and Freeman below him. So you can see why it's an attractive proposition for someone.
have a lot of power there for sure. And I mean, like you say, I think the ambition is there from Newcastle for better or worse again to, that is a separate conversation, but they do want to take the club to unparalleled heights and they've already shown evidence that they can get there. So really, really interested to see what he does do there. I'll miss him, but then at the same time, we move on. He's left a very strong legacy and that's all we can be faithful for. And even in the short term, Bobby, in terms of summer plans, obviously the hard yards are already being done there. So at what point do you start to see the negatives taking effect, if any? I mean, do you think it's more a case of short-term friction and then long-term stability as the club settles?
No, so short term, there is no issue with Dougie leaving the club because the groundwork, the planning has already been done for this summer. The club know who they want to sign. It's whether they can sign them or not. Lacroix is the number one centre-half target. That's not going to change if Dougie's going to leave the club or not. Mark Gee's probably going to leave the football club as we reported a while back. That's not going to change if Dougie leaves the football club or not. The plans are in place, the methodology's in place, the structure's in place for this summer. So it's certainly not a short-term problem. And I don't think it's a long-term problem either, as long as you get the right replacement. If you get the right replacement in, it should just be a nice, smooth transition period. And long-term, you've still got the same model. You've still got the majority of the same personnel. You've just got a different person heading up the footballing, scouting, transfery department.
No, definitely. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how, like I say, the summer plays out, but that will be Dougie's work. The work has already been done. I think it's the longer term in terms of who ends up replacing him and how those gaps are filled where I think it becomes more interesting. But
it's things like clubs don't just scout players for 6 weeks. You know, you might hear that, I don't know what stories have been out there recently. Crystal Palace are tracking who, I don't know, Jadon Philogene. Was that was one, wasn't it? For that story to come out means you're heavily tracking a player and you've been tracking them for a while. It doesn't just mean that, you know, it's a name they pulled out overnight and they've gone to go and send a few representatives down to watch. So these players on the Palace's shortlist for this summer have been severely watched, severely scouted by Dougie and his team. And they know exactly what they want to do as a club. Now, that doesn't. Steve Parish is the man with the power of the purse, if you like. He knows exactly who are at the top of the list. So Dougie leaving isn't going to stop him and his proteges getting deals done. It might take that little bit of attractiveness of having Dougie selling the club, because he does that excellently to every player that signs. But it's not the end of the world. And certainly this summer, I don't see Dougie, if Dougie does go, I don't see that being a big issue because the groundwork's been done.
Really, really excited, and it's kind of trepidation as well among fans, but I'm sure we'll get there. And, you know, like I just said earlier, I don't think he's bigger than the club, I don't think anyone is, and I think we'll absolutely get through it, probably with flying colours. Really looking forward to the summer window. And speaking of summer, the sun's beating down in South London, lovely bank holiday weekend, and just to top it all off, a few pints in the sunshine and Palace beating Man United very, very comfortably. Great day to be in Manchester, I'll say that. I absolutely have been loving life at the moment. That's obvious gloating at work aside from me, you know, to see a historically massive team like Man United getting absolutely smacked about at Selhurst put a smile on the face of Palace fans far and wide. Going into that game, I think, you know, there was always a kind of expectation here that United were going to be bare bones with a number of centre-half injuries. When you actually saw the lineup, Bobby, how did you react?
Well, look, I said, what was my bold prediction on the podcast last
week? You said 3-0 and you
Palace
were
would win 3-0, yeah. Before the game, at 7:38, I sent a text message to someone. I said, Palace are going to beat Manchester United 5-0. So I was right in between the two. So that was how my perspectives changed when the lineup came out. I think that's the best way to answer that question, is it went from Palace winning 3-0 to Palace winning 5-0. You know, I just always thought it was going to be easy for Palace, convincing for Palace. And on the whole, it was. You know, in the first half, they could have been a little bit better with their passing, and there was a little things that were a bit off, but they still, you know, got into the break ahead. In the second half, they were absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Manchester United were appalling defensively. Casemiro and Johnny Evans looked like they was playing injured. You know, it was just very easy for Palace all night long, and, you know, they cruised to a well-deserved 4-0 victory, and I actually thought 4-0 flattered Manchester United, to be honest. I think if Palace would have had 7 or 8 on Monday night, I don't think it would have been unfair. You know, you had the one off the line, Edouard's one that hit the post late on. There were so many chances that it really just could have been anything.
Chance creation was insane. I think it's really funny you mentioned Casemiro and Evans, because, I mean, that's an incredibly makeshift centre-half pairing. You know, you've got a 36-year-old veteran who was released by relegated Leicester, you know, coming in. Basically, there was a rumour around, you know, a lot of United forums that he'd failed an injury test. I don't know how true that is, but I think there was a lot of commentary that he wasn't really fit to play, but a lack of options meant he had to.
A couple of times in the ground, he winced a bit and looked like he was in quite a lot of pain. And I said to someone I was with that he looks injured here, and he generally just looks like he's soldiering on because there's no one else that can come on. So I think he was almost certainly injured. But I just think it was really weird, actually. It really reminded me of the Johnny Evans joining Manchester United situation, that, you know, he was just looking for some fitness. He went and trained with their academy, and all of a sudden, 3 weeks later, he was announced as a signing for their senior side. I just think that shows you how much of a bad position Manchester United Football Club are in. And, you know, the 4-0 against Palace even exacerbates that even more. But they're just an absolute mess of the football club, and I can't see it getting better anytime soon.
There's so much politics at United as well. I mean, there's politics everywhere, but, I mean, to walk into that, it feels like a nest of vipers. Like, I just couldn't I couldn't stomach Hollywood people that would do that. You know, you've got to be a certain character to want to go into that situation willingly. I think United is.
Alex Ferguson papered up the cracks for many years, and all of a sudden they're really showing. And I think it's just every manager appointment they've made, it's just got worse and worse.
We've gone very pub chat about United there, but yeah, I want to move on. Casemiro as well. I wanted to talk about him as well because he had a bit of a disaster class, and he's one of the most decorated players we've ever had at Selhurst Park. I mean, five-time Champions League winner, let alone the domestic trophies that he has under his belt. He got dispossessed 8 times, which is the most of any Premier League player this season. His legs have gone. I think that's a phrase that gets bandied around a lot, but I mean, everyone knows that he's a shadow of his former self, increasingly misdeployed as well in Ten Hag's system. Got the ball nicked for the third goal. I mean, it was a bit of a disaster class from the champion himself. So it's kind of sad in many ways. He looks like he's got a move to Saudi written all over him. I'm not saying that lightly. I think he really has. It's the sort of thing it feels like it's apt for him, to just sort of wind down his career in a kind of Benzema-esque way and just collect a paycheck because, not that Benzema's past it, he of course isn't, but I mean, it just feels fitting. It doesn't seem like he belongs in the Premier League at this level. He's probably one of the worst players we've had even in the Championship come to visit, if you really want to go back that far. It was
Yeah,
so,
no.
so shocking.
He was the worst player on the pitch by a long way. I thought he was appalling.
So many individual battles and performances,
I
but
think
yeah.
Jamie Carragher got it spot on, actually. I know he's come under a bit of fire for saying that a five-time Champions League winner should get moved to America, move to Saudi, and take the payday. But I actually thought he said quite an interesting quote in his analysis of the game, which was, "Leave football before the football leaves you," and Casemiro, it really looked like the football left him on Monday night. He was very poor. I don't think he's bad on the ball because I don't think that quality ever loses you. Sorry, ever leaves you, because if you're good on the ball, you're good on the ball. But I just thought the lack of pace combined with just the natural slowing down, it just made him look so poor. And the minute anyone put any pressure on him, he crumbled. And he's just not good enough for the Premier League anymore. And Mateta, Elise, Eze, Hughes, Wharton had a field there.
Oh, it was a brilliant field day from Palace's perspective. I mean, a very, very dominant performance. This isn't a United show. I don't want to talk about the woes at the back of them, but I mean, it was obviously quite enticing at the prospect of coming up against that centre half pairing. But it wasn't just them that were absolutely abysmal. We'll get onto some of the failings there too. But we want to focus on Palace here, and let's just talk through some of those goals because I mean, they were sumptuous from start to finish. But Palace having very strong passages of play. It's Elise winning the ball on the halfway line. Talk me through that for that first goal, 12 minutes in.
Yeah, it was beautiful, wasn't it? It just a shocking from United. I think that needs to be said, because they let Michael Olise run through them unchallenged. I mean, no one tried to get anywhere near him, and it just opened up beautifully for him once he emerged into the box, and he found the far corner excellently. Stunning goal, stunning player, stunning skill, but just embarrassing defending. United, they didn't get anywhere near him. They just allowed him to run through. It was pathetic.
I mean, the centre back pairing was part of that, but Kobbie Mainoo was probably most at fault. I mean, he was the one that was responsible for tracking him. I think he lost the ball in the first place as well. So, he's obviously someone that was being scrutinised a lot. This was kind of the sort of backup England place derby, if you want to call it that, between him and Adam Wharton. And I think, let's say, one of them
Well, I
passed the
am,
test and one of them didn't. But
as you know, I've started a Substack, and not to plug,
plug away.
so ahead of the game, I'd written an article on Sunday night about Adam Wharton, should he be on the England squad, and it was pretty much ready to go. I thought, right, I'm just going to sit here and wait. I'm just going to leave the article sit in it and watch the game on Monday night and see how it goes. And it just proved everything that I thought. I think if Kobbie Mainoo gets in the England squad ahead of Adam Wharton, I would be shocked and amazed. I think he will, don't get me wrong. I think Southgate will go with Mainoo because he's had the whole season under his belt. But my word, Adam Wharton was levels above him on Monday night.
Absolutely. I mean, for context, since joining the Premier League, Adam Wharton has won more combined tackles and interceptions than any other player. That is obviously in just in half a season, but it's still a fine testament to how someone at that age has grown in.
And that's the only thing with any data-led analysis you try and do on Mainoo and Wharton, the per 90 stats look slightly off because he's not got a full season to him. Whereas when I compared the stats for Championship Adam Wharton this season to Kobbie Mainoo's first half of the season, Wharton walked all over it. But obviously, you've got the weakness of that data that he's played in a quote-unquote easier league for half of that season. But the data is in favour of Manu, but the actual meaningful data, and I think I said as much as this, because comparison per 90 since Walton has joined the Premier League and over Kobbie Mainoo's whole season, his long balls competed, chances created, crossing accuracy, tackles, forward passing per 90 minutes, and recoveries are significantly higher. And when I say significantly, we're talking a couple of percentage points higher. So, Adam Walton, for him not to be involved in the England setup, and should Kobbie Mainoo be involved, it would be a crime, because my word, he's been incredible since joining Crystal Palace from Blackburn in January for £18 million.
I think we prayed him to the heavens. I think we haven't seen such a complete midfielder in decades at Palace, and I don't apologise for that by any stretch. I think he's absolutely
Goodbye.
phenomenal. We got Cabaye probably at the latter end of his career. I think if we got him earlier, yeah, I think there would have been a shout there. Obviously, a terrific, terrific player too, and obviously Walton has still to grow. So I don't think it's a directly fair comparison, but maybe I'm exaggerating. I think maybe there's a case there, but I still would stand by it. Push comes to shove, I think he's a fantastically complete and well-rounded midfielder. I think he gives the ball away a little bit too much for my liking, but that's a really picky thing to say because he's obviously still 20 and only just
You
turned 20
know
at that.
what? I find that interesting that you say that, because the one thing I think about Walton is the one thing he's not got in his game is that little bit of pace. But he is so Rolls-Royce on the ball, he buys himself time. His passing
Yeah.
is unbelievable, that the little bit of pace he lacks, he just makes up for, because he's miles ahead of everyone else. He might be a second slower than everyone else, but he's 3 seconds more ahead of the game in his head. And it just buys him so much more time on the ball, and his passing quality is ridiculous. The long ball we pinged against Liverpool to the left wing was ridiculous. Trying to think what else. On Monday night, his passing was just 10 out of 10. He's been remarkable.
And his ability to dictate play and tempo like that is really, really phenomenal. And there was a comparison to Xavi and Iniesta in, I think it was Telegraph, and the writer got a load of stick for that. And increasingly I'm just thinking, well, why was he wrong? I actually, obviously he's not that good yet, but I don't think it's an exaggeration to say there are shades of that because the quality is there. Look, Bobby, we could praise him to the heavens, but the second goal obviously comes through a robust bit of play again. Quick Mateta counter-attack on the break, absolutely skins this potentially injured Johnny Evans and manages to get it on his weak foot, no less, and squeeze it past the post with some power before Onana can really react to it. I mean, what did you make of it?
Couldn't quite believe it, to be honest. I mean, what a strike. The power in it was ridiculous. Should Onana have done better? Maybe. Does that mean I'm not going to say how beautiful the finish was? Absolutely not. I mean, it was just unbelievable from a man who's just full of confidence at the moment. At the awards night on Tuesday night, was it Tuesday night, Wednesday
Yeah,
night, whenever it
Tuesday.
was, Tuesday I think it was. That's how long this week's been. Bank holiday Monday's totally blown my mind.
Oh, I was pissed by the time the game came around, so don't worry.
I just lose total track of it. And Bank Holiday Monday in sports journalism is just a Monday, but everyone else being at home whilst you're trying to work, it just throws your brain a bit. But his footballing performance have been absolutely sensational. He's been Palace's best player of the second half of the season. For me, not player of the season. That's a separate argument. And it was just a stunning strike. It was everything about the move was brilliant. United, once again, so poor defensively. But don't take anything away from Palace, who were just brilliant. The Mateta finish just topped off a wonderful move.
We'll talk about the ceremony later, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of a language in itself, the way he actually just beautifully commands the football pitch these days from the front. I mean, it's something else that we don't really see. So it's just such a transformation. And like you say, that's his, what, 12th goal of the season. It's his sixth in as many home games under Glasner. It's the longest streak we've had by double as a club. In fact, the last time that record was surpassed in the Premier League, I think the record is nine, and it was held all the way in 96, 97 with Alan Shearer. So, that's how long ago we're talking back in terms of, these really, really strong streaks. So there's actually an argument. I mean, he can't hit it this season, but I think certainly next season, if he can carry in that form, I mean, who's to say he doesn't? I mean, there's so many positives from his game and such a consistency that we've never really seen from him. It feels like every week we talk about it. That's my real point here, because it is again something that feels so unusual. I actually thought, and you shoot me for this, I always thought Edouard was going to be the man to sort of finally break the double digit figure and to find that patch. I never had it as Mateta. I genuinely didn't think he was technical or shrewd enough or ambitious enough to have it in him, and he's completely proved me wrong. His attitude's been phenomenal. It's been really, really encouraging to see. I mean, to get that on his weak foot with such confidence and such a power to actually drive through is something that we never really, really saw from him. And certainly not least delivered with such efficiency. So I think it shows how far his game's come that he's having the confidence to take it on his left foot to actually power it pretty much first time after a dribble and coming off of that. In the way that he did. So really, really fascinating there. And
Yeah,
obviously the
and
third goal, yeah, go on.
I think there can be a scientific explanation to this. The guy's gone bald and he started scoring goals. I mean, it's phenomenal.
It's aerodynamics.
I'll be really interested to see how Nicholas Jackson does over the next few weeks because he's taken inspiration from Mateta and gone bald himself. So, if
Oh, I want to get
Jackson,
that Adam Wharton trim me. I want to go skinhead.
if Jackson, starts scoring goals, then Mateta is inspiring people to, so number one, go bald, and number two, score a shed load of goals.
Well, have you seen the state of my hairline, Bobby? Look at it. It's thinning. It's
Maybe
bad,
you should
man.
go bald.
I was going to say, maybe this is time. I'm going to get that
God, you
Adam
don't get
Wharton,
this
like.
analysis on any other podcast.
No, this is beautiful. This is like Monday Night Football with your heart out. This is where it's at. Guys, if there's ever been a time to go bald, look, the sun's out, do it. You've got nothing to lose. It's a really versatile haircut, the skin fade. Go
Inspired
be a
by
slaphead.
Mateta.
Be like your idols, Adam Wharton and Jean-Philippe Mateta. Get that trim. Take it all off. Do whatever you need. Buzz cut. I don't care. It's bald season. We're
You can always
bald.
get the
We are
Jordan
so
IU as
back.
well. Okay. Nice
Yeah, what's
trim
the
there
Jordan
as
Eye?
well.
Yeah, the little, thinning widow's peak that you just somehow managed to get away with because you're Jordan Eye. God, this is a. Should we just start a hair podcast? Fuck it. Let's just do it. All right, I digress. This is taking a turn. We will keep this in. I stand
Of
by that.
course.
It's essential chat, Bobby. Right. There is more flashpoint, serious talk that I want to talk about. Guess you could say it's a bit of a hairy situation in the game when we thought that United had scored. They hadn't, obviously. These days, if you so much as, flick the goalkeeper or put a finger on him, that's it. You get the goal disallowed these days. If the game's gone soft, that's your problem. But like it or not, they thought they scored. They had the ball in the net. But Bobby, it didn't quite come off for United. What a fucking shame. What happened there? Talk me through that.
Yeah, I actually thought it should have been disallowed. And I'd say this, as a neutral. I don't think if the ball's being contested up in the air with the current way the rules are, that you can touch the goalkeeper and make them fall over and the ball goes in the back of the net. Man United had directly scored from a shoulder going into Dean Henderson, who was jumping, and Dean Henderson's ending up on the floor. Has he made a meal of it? Probably. Is it a bit soft? Yes. Has them shoving Dean Henderson directly led to them scoring. Yes. So for me, because the referee gave that decision on the pitch, I think it was the right decision, and I don't think VAR should have got involved. But then again, if the referee gives the goal, I think the goal stands as well. So it's a very subjective one. But yeah, I had no problems with the decision.
But no, you didn't. No, and likewise, I don't think anyone at SC25 did. For what it's worth, I think, there's the obvious contact with the shoulder barge. You could see the weight of Henderson's body actually moving. He's actually actively shunted by it. It's not a case of him just kind of losing his balance. There is an active cause and effect there between what Huijsen's doing and the way in which the force is actually sort of throwing off his ability to do his job or have a chance to contest the ball fairly. So for me, in my mind, it's no doubt that it shouldn't have stood. United fans were not happy, but this isn't 1992, unfortunately. I'm sure they wish it was. Yeah, it was never a goal for me.
Referee was poor, actually.
Yeah, he was, and he had
Again,
this camera on him the whole time, which I found quite funny because.
I thought he was very one way. I think whenever Palace had a player hacked down, I don't think he gave the foul. Whenever it was Palace hacking players down, he gave the foul. I think he was very biased in one way, towards Manchester United, even at 4-0,
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was just going to say, I think it's really funny that you had this camera on for this sort of pro referee documentary the whole time, because now, like forever in the history of that documentary, you're just going to see United getting smacked about by a little old Palace, which I think is kind of beautiful in its own way. I think to
Yeah,
get
I think
comeuppance and to.
it was McStain who did the tweet, and he said about words to the effect that Palace fans will be demanding PLP demand the footage so they can release the footage so they can see that Mateta goal from various different from a new angle that nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah, quite. I could relive that in all sorts of angles. God, that'd be brilliant. But yeah, really, really interested to see the footage that comes out from that because I have a feeling it's going to be pretty glorious doing the rounds on socials. Right, but we have to move on. Obviously, the third goal was a bit of a collector's item. Just Tyrone Mitchell's third in the whole Premier League era and second of the season. Really, really fantastic to see. I mean, the players just crowding around him. You know, he's clearly a popular and much loved figure, both with the fans and the players alike. I think everyone was delighted. Just as a little aside, actually, it was Chris Grierson's last ever player interview with Tyrone Mitchell when he was discussing that goal. So, you know, I want to pay a little bit of homage to him because he's really taken our content, but just to the next level. But in all
Oh,
seriousness, really
yes.
good luck to him and whatever comes next, because I mean, he's been a phenomenal behind the scenes servant and really, really going to miss him interviewing players after matches and all the other various bits of work that he's done over the years. And really, really hope that whoever comes in can fill his boots because, yeah, a real icon of the club without probably getting much clearance outside of the club. Tyrone Mitchell, let's get back on topic. Really, really good to see that goal. The celebration was fumbled a bit. He wanted to knee slide. Elise got in the way, so he just kind of went with it. Really, really wholesome. But let's go back to the goal itself because it was incredibly well worked from a kind of recycled set piece. So talk to me about that, Bobby.
Yeah, so I think some Palace fans by the end of the season, you know, if they don't score directly from a corner, I think they'll probably count it as a goal from a corner this season. But you know, it was really good to see the recycled corner. I mean, what a phenomenal ball to the back post by Adam Walton. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Stunning ball curled into the back post that Anderson cut back, and you know, Tyrick Mitchell had an empty net to tap it into, and which he finished really well. And it was a good goal to see. As you said, he didn't really know what to do with his celebrations. He kind of just froze, bless him. But you know, it was a really good team goal. And I think that goal actually epitomizes how much they progressed as a group, because set pieces that there was hopeless at, even scoring from recycled set pieces. The only one you'd had was against Manchester United, the Anderson header. Oh, no, it wasn't a header, was it? It was a kind of volley-esque goal, wasn't it? So, but the Anderson goal against Manchester United, that's the only real goal from a set piece Palace had this season. So it just shows how much they've improved. And you know, that ball from Adam Walton was just stunning.
Yeah, I mean, it was phenomenal. The technique on that to get that right and then Anderson to actually square it was phenomenal. It was a bit of a striker's finish, wasn't it? I think one that a certain Jean-Philippe Mateta would be proud of, wouldn't you agree, Bobby?
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely. I know it's a bit of a tap in, but I think you have to be there at the right place for the right time and to accelerate in the right way
Poacher's
to get
finish.
there. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, textbook poacher's finish, you know. It's something we've seen the likes of Edouard doing really well, actually. And I think Mateta's increasingly getting on those sort of chances as well now. So, you know, I think any striker would be proud of that, let alone the left back. I suppose left wing back's probably more of an apt term now, because I mean, do you see him in this new advanced role under Glasner getting into those situations more, or do you think it was more just a consequence of the way in which the ball was recycled?
No, he's certainly been playing in a higher position in the left wing back role, definitely. And I think he's doing okay. You know, he's not the most attacking wing back in the world, don't get me wrong, but he's doing okay. He's learning the system. He's really dedicated. He's an applied professional, and he will do whatever's asked of him. And I think playing in a position that's slightly uncomfortable, that's not his own, I think he's doing really well.
He actually said in his interview afterwards that I referenced earlier that he's relishing that role. I think he's looking forward to getting the chance to score more goals, get more assists, have a more of an attacking output, because I think that's obviously an area of his game that we know he's got some ability in, but obviously it's far more raw and incomplete compared to his defensive ability. And you know, he's a rogue shout, probably left field one, but I think increasingly with injury, we spoke, didn't we, about in the last episode that he could be an England shout. And I think it's moments like that that are going to get him noticed and really get the attention on him as a more complete kind of. I see our kind of fullbacks more like box to box, you know, wingers in some ways, and I think that's the sort of play that really proves it. Yeah, really, really good to see. But I think, of course, the main event was that kind of second goal from Michael Olyse. We talked about, you know, doubling up earlier, and obviously this is Palace's doubling up on Man United at large this season, which is phenomenal to see in the Premier League era. But of course, Olyse got his brace, and really, if this was as an audition for a United show, then United really failed. I think, you know, if anything, it was an absolute trouncing from Olyse, who looks bigger than the entire club in a performance like that. But let's not gloat. Let's go back to the goal itself, because I mean, it comes from a phenomenal win back from Daniel Munoz, who, surprise, surprise, is in the winger pocket, very much at the other end of the pitch, dispossesses Casemiro. I mean, just talk me through the rest, Bobby.
Yeah, it was shocking from Casemiro again. Really easy from Munoz. He'd done brilliantly to keep it going, but it was just really easy. He found Olise and, you know, Michael Olise does Michael Olise things and pelts it into the back of the net. I mean, middle of the net, maybe. Should Onana do better? Maybe. But let's not take it away from Olise. It was a very nice finish.
Again, no one really stepped up to him. I mean, he has a bit less space than before, but I mean, he still finds a way to kind of curl it in without much challenge. And I think, United are kind of shell shocked by this
I
point,
think
particularly when the ball's lost.
Elise said after the game, or it might have been Glasner, one of the two of them said it. He said that normally he goes far post all the time. He shoots far post, far post, shoot far post. And he told him in training, well, if that's not working, shoot near post. And he shot near post and he scored.
I have to correct you. He didn't tell him in training. He told him in the showers. Did you catch
Oh,
that?
told him in the showers, that was right, yes.
Yeah, I think this is where
Showers
Hodgson
after
and
Fulham
Vieira
away.
went wrong.
Yeah, it was Glasner who said it, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, I was just saying this is where Hodgson and Vieira went wrong because for me, if you need to shower with your players. Let's take it out of context a bit more. I think not showering with your players is weak mentality as a manager. So I think that's the sort of this is clearly what makes Pep Guardiola, for instance, Pep Guardiola. He's in there. He's showering now. He's not. Let's not get carried away. Jokes aside,
Well,
it was a really,
random bit
really
of
interesting.
analysis.
Oh, absolutely. We've already talked about hairlines, so come on, we can get shower talk in. Jokes aside, he's obviously not showering with Elise, but he's very much there just talking with the players at any moment. And I think it's really interesting that Elise seems quite receptive to that. I think it's probably Elise's initiative that he's talking, he's constantly thinking about trying to improve his game. So I think it's quite funny, yeah. And I think even Glasner himself was cracking up when he was being a bit candid about it. But it is still really telling that I think these conversations and this mentality in the squad is always there. And I think it just shows again the buy-in that this squad's had with the new regime and how they've really responded to this desire to constantly improve their game. We've referenced it so many times with Mateta because it gets talked about a lot in interviews, but I think this is more evidence of players wanting to look at little ways they can improve their game, looking at new techniques, looking at things they might be missing, and someone potentially spotting something that they could just try and just get experimenting with. And it paid dividends. It was a really, really good finish. I think Onana, I'll be harsh on you, Bobby. I think it was terrible from the goalkeeper. I think his first shot, sorry, the first goal from Elise, I should say, was kind of harsh, I think, to attribute just to Onana. But I think that second one, he was completely wrong-footed. He fully took the bait. He definitely wasn't expecting it to go to his
Yeah, no,
left.
certainly. It was poor goalkeeping, 100%, I think it was. But I just don't like
Yeah.
away from the finisher of Michael Olise.
No, of course, we're used to him cutting in like that. And I think what I find staggering to conclude really on all of this with Elise is, Palace have found their talisman again. We haven't really seen this kind of, and I don't want to compare to Wilfred all the time. We have to move on as a club, and Elise is not a Wilfred player. But the similarity has to be there in terms of the ability to finish goals like that and to take goals with the scruff of the neck. And it's just something we've not seen for a little bit. And I think to break that lull finally and to have that is really, really encouraging. So really, really good for Michael Elise to scrap off what was ultimately a very commanding performance. But where do we go from here, Bobby? We've got two more games this season. We've nothing really to play for. And yet the players don't look any less motivated than they have been early points under Glasner, frankly. There's always this desire to turn a page. So how do you see the rest of the two games going, just looking ahead?
There's always something to play for, there's minor placings up for grabs, which means there's money's up for grabs, so there's always something to play for. Glasner, he's not been in the job long, 3 months. He's still trying to get to grips with his team. He's still trying to work out what the plans are for next season in the sense of how we can get the best out of those players. So players know that their spots in the team are up for grabs next season. So it's the case of winning both of these last games, 2 games of the season for Palace. As Glasner said, going unbeaten for the rest of the season. So obviously that opens the drawers up, but certainly not, there's nothing to play for. There's always something to play for. And I think Palace are aware of that. And they ultimately want to give their fans something to cheer about in these last 2 games.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the squad looks really motivated. I think, even a couple of seasons ago under Hodgson, the squad looked frankly by the beach and they were just having this kind of atrocious winless run at the end of the season. And I think Glasner has changed their mentality. And I think the general longer term refreshing of the squad has also changed that. I think players are genuinely hungry. I think they want to right some of the wrongs of the past this season. I think there's a genuine desire to improve. And perhaps, yeah, maybe more selfishly, some of them are looking ahead to the summer. But that's not the point. I think as a group, there's a togetherness that's really there. Really, really encouraging to see. And obviously, let's look at the context of United as well, because that is a game that ultimately is going to live long in the memory of fans. I wouldn't go so far as to even say it was our best performance, but it's certainly our best result of the season. I mean, what would you go along with that, Bobby?
Yeah, I think Newcastle was the best performance. I think it was totally dominant, but I think beating Man United 4-0 as little old Crystal Palace is a great result for that club. No matter what position United find themselves in at the moment, they're the biggest club in world football. For Palace to beat them, it's a remarkable result for the football club and the fans of the football club.
I think Palace have generally done quite well at the North West this season. I mean, to actually go to Old Trafford and then have to have the reverse fixture as well and come away with two wins, to win at Anfield, to get a draw against City, to get a draw at Everton, which we never really seem to do. Everything's been really fantastic. So it's a real testament to the hard work that's being put in there. And I think one of the things that's really startled me about this unbeaten run is to get 13 out of 15 points, not with teams struggling for relegation for the most part, but against Liverpool, United, West Ham, who had a strong start to the season at least, a very strong Newcastle side. It's
The last
fantastic.
is the stat. Palace's last five wins have come against teams who are above them in the table. Is that the stat? Or
Yeah,
the
that is. That's something that it feels like unknown territory for us. We're not used to punching above our weight like that. I think we're kind of a team that's sort of happy to pass, go and collect 200s and occasionally cause an upset. But I think there's a genuine persistency and consistency that we haven't seen in God knows when, years. We could be talking 5, 6 years here. It's probably not the sort of gusto we've seen since you managed to get out that awful relegation zone in 17-18 in terms of that battle. I think the actual togetherness of the group is at an all-time high. And my big fear, as we discussed in the last episode, is actually how many of them can we keep hold of and can we actually keep that core together? It was encouraging. And I think this is a nice segue into what I wanted to end on, which was a bit about the end of season awards. So, Bobby, the three big winners were obviously Jesse Derry, Elise Hughes, and Jean-Philippe Mateta. I mean, would you go along with all three of those picks and what did you think of them?
Jesse Derry, yes, I think he's been phenomenal. I think Zach Marsh would have had a very good case if he didn't get injured in the fashion that he did. Obviously, Jesse Derry finished the season with injury as well, but it certainly wasn't as prolonged as that. I mean, Jesse Derry for a first year scholar has been phenomenal. Just an incredible season. Loads of goals, loads of assists. I haven't got the numbers in my head at the moment, but he's just been ridiculous. And hopefully, as he said on the stage on Tuesday night, there'll be many more to come for him. Palace's player of the season, no, I wouldn't have gone along with. I don't think it was Mateta. I think, yes, he's been the most trans. He's seen the biggest transformation of any player this season, for certain. I think if you were doing a player of the season off the second half of the season, then yes, definitely he'd be player of the season. But for me, player of the season should have been the person who has been the most consistent over the whole course of the season. And there's only been one man, and that's Jefferson Lerma. I mean, the guy's failed to drop. It has very rarely dropped anything below a 7 out of 10. So, yeah, for me, Lerma should have been player of the season. And Elise Hughes, I mean, what a player. The goal scoring form is ridiculous. And I think for me, it was very tight between her and Annabelle Blanchard.
You think with a goal scoring tally for Elise Hughes that she sort of carry the team in inverted commas I'm doing there. She hasn't though. That's the best bit of all. Not only has she been phenomenal individually in terms of her goal scoring ability, but the whole team has been absolutely fantastic. So I mean, it was such a hard pick for the women's team. I mean, I think it was pretty close for both actually when you really think about the Lerma Mateta runoff at least. But I mean, the competition for the women's squad in particular was stacked. I mean, it's a
But
really really
then
phenomenal team
again, I
effort.
think you always learn a lot from who's player of the year, right? And for the men, that was Mateta, split between Mateta and Anderson. And Mateta and Anderson were also in the top three for the fans' player of the year. So if that's what the players are thinking as well, then they're doing something right on the pitch and they're doing something right off the pitch. So Mateta is certainly, for his transformation, he's definitely deserving of the recognition. But I just thought, for me, for pure consistency across the season, it was Lerma. And the goal of the season one actually was the one that I disagreed with the most. Do I think the goal against Liverpool was a thing of beauty for Palace? Yes, it was a stunning team goal. But I think it kind of defeats the objective goal of the season if you pick the team goal, because I mean, by far the best strike was Jeffrey Schlupps against Fulham. I mean, what a stunner that was. That should have been goal of the season. But because of the whole move against Liverpool, that was awarded goal of the season. I just think it's a bit difficult to give an individual award of goal of the season to Eze when that was a team goal and the finish wasn't the most beautiful thing ever anyone's ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give a counter argument, Bobby, about your pick earlier about the men's player of the season. Jean-Philippe Mateta, I know his goal scoring form wasn't phenomenal at the start of the season, but you think from that City game when he sort of took it by the scruff of his neck and managed to really kind of spearhead that charge, that really famous draw there.
But
I mean,
it was never consistent performances, was it? It was spells. Mateta would have spells of where he was brilliant, and then spells of where he looked like he wasn't very good at all, and shouldn't have been in the side. So I just think it's very hard to give a player of the season to someone who hasn't been consistent. I think there's the slight recency bias that because he's been the best player since Glasner's come in, and since just before Glasner's come in, actually, I'll give him his due, that he's player of the season. But just for me, he wasn't.
So would you say it's more of like a slow stutter, sort of a slow growth, rather than someone that's kind of burst into life like Lerma has from the get-go?
Well, he has burst into life in the second half of the season, don't get me wrong. But I just don't think you can give a player of the season for someone who's only had half a season of excellence, whereas Lerma has been at 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10 every single week.
Yeah, no, I mean that's for fair. That's a fair point. I want to look at some other awards just briefly as well. Amy Everett and Chris Richards winning the Community Award, PFA Community Award. Really, really good to see, particularly a senior first team player getting more involved with that side. You know, the holistic side, the image of the club, and not just the image, but the actual impact work that we do in the community. I think it's really nice that we've recognised that. And I think Chris Richards has served as a fantastic ambassador of the club. You know, always got a good smile on his face. Seems like he has a real good can-do attitude. He's a very normal, relatable man, I feel. And I mean, what I particularly like about Chris Richards, I don't know if you saw it as a bit of an aside here, I know, but did you see the Premier League try to do the classic, you know, let's stitch up the American with
Oh, the
geography, and they
geography there is
actually,
remarkable,
yeah,
isn't
he
it?
smashed it. Yeah, smashed it. Really, really good to see that. But yeah, I think both of them have been terrific ambassadors for the club, both Amy and Chris, and you know, very well deserved in that front.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Summers and the Palace for Life Foundation do unbelievable work in the community. And it's really good to see that highlighted. Chris and Amy have been out on numerous visits this season. They've really showcased the club. They've supported local children in the community and local families in the community. And it's really good to see, and it's always good to see that highlighted and showing off the good work that Crystal Palace Football Club do in South London.
Yeah, I always try, particularly when I have, you know, obviously a lot of friends that aren't into football as well. I always try to highlight the work that clubs do in the community when I'm trying to explain the value of football, because we don't just go for 90 minutes and the entertainment on the pitch. We go for the characters, we go for the people we see, we go for the communities we love. There's a family tradition often involved, and you know, there's so many good byproducts that come out of football for all the crap and all the negativity and all the controversy and you know, big money and you know, kind of you know, sovereign state funds getting involved for PR purposes. You know, we could talk all day about the perils of football. It is a mess in many ways, but there's always these nice byproducts that come out of it. And I think Palace get this really right. I think Palace for Life is a fantastic organization. It goes across. I mean, I know, for example, Everton in the community, they obviously the Everton charity armor, you know, world leading in terms of their charitable status, in terms of the work they do. But you could look throughout the Premier League and beyond at some of the good work that's going on there to support local communities. And like I said earlier, I think it's just really, really good that we're recognizing that properly and dutifully. You know, we give back as a club. We've always been a club that's done that, and I think that does it very well, in fact. So yeah, final shout out from me, but very, very, very big shout out to everyone that's involved with the community at Palace. I want to end on a little bit about Joel Ward as well, getting again the Chairman's Outstanding Contribution Award. He's obviously 35 now. There's even talk about whether he'll actually stay. I mean, I think it's unclear increasingly whether he will or won't. I think it's definitely something that's a possibility. But I mean, what do you think about him and his ultimate legacy at the club, Bobby? Because, like it or not, his twilight is coming.
Well, Steve Parish gave him quite a beautiful speech on Tuesday night, and he rounded off his speech by saying that this doesn't mean you're leaving or anything. So, going off that, it sounds like he will be offered a new contract at the club. Wardy, in his speech, said that he'd like to think he'd be offered a testimonial, and I think that would be the perfect thing for the club to do next season and maybe make that season his last at the club. My understanding in terms of the testimonial is it's certainly something the player really wants to do. Okay, he said that publicly now. It's certainly something Palace for Life really want to do. And Wardy has said that Palace for Life can be one of the charities involved. Three charities taking an equal split, Palace for Life and two others is what he'd like to do, one pit by himself, one pit by his wife. So, you know, the groundwork's in place for that. And it's just the club saying yes and letting him actually do it. I wonder if they don't want to do it straight away because it kind of shows, you know, when a player has a testimonial, it kind of signifies the end at times. So I wonder if that's been why they've been holding back on it the last 3, 4, 5 years. But, you know, a remarkable servant to the club and more than deserving of the award that has seen the likes of James McArthur and Danny Young, you know, two legends of the club for a very different reason. Obviously, James McArthur, one of the best players in midfield Palace has seen in recent times and maybe in the history of the club. And Danny Young, a phenomenal serviceman to the club, started as a kit man, finished as player liaison officer. So, you know, he's really got himself in good company there in terms of people who mean a hell of a lot to Crystal Palace. And what has he been here? Over 10 years. He's just a phenomenal man. who almost didn't join Crystal Palace Football Club, almost ended up in Leeds, and more than deserving of the recognition.
Absolutely. I think club legend is a word that's used a lot, bandied around too casually, but I think Wilfred Zaha and Joel Ward are probably two from recent years that deserve their names on the
James
likes of,
McArthur.
James McArthur. Yeah, I think there's a shout there too, to be fair. I'll give it to Macca as well. I do miss that man too, God. But these are players that are going to be up there with, your Ian Wrights, your Jim Cannons, your Salacos, and so on.
Julian Speroni.
Yeah, Speroni, again, childhood icon. Again, you could go on. I'm not going to be able to get everyone in here. Andy Johnson, go on. Let's throw someone out there. I used to live near Ben Watson, so he'll always be a legend to me. He
Arteta.
likes to do his gardening shirtless. Mertesa will be up there. Yeah, there's loads. Don't no, seriously, I used to live really near Ben Watson. He's a lovely, lovely man. Saw him out walking the dog, doing runs, doing very mundane stuff, to be honest. But yeah, in summer he'd always mow his lawn shirtless. Don't ask, little anecdote, but when I used to go to Selhurst as a kid, he was always my playground icon. Some people had Ronaldinho, I had Ginger Pele, I had Ben Watson. Yeah, I think Wardy has got a real shout to be up there with the rest of them. Absolutely. If nothing else, for pure consistency and persistency, which is a duo I've used before today. Right, we'll have to end it there. But listen, Robbie, really good having you on, getting your thoughts on all things Palace. Plenty of drama going on with Dougie Friedman, so we'll keep an eye on that. If you haven't done so already, I'd really appreciate it if you could just drop us a review. You can leave us 1 star, 5 star, whatever you want. Anything helps us improve, and we always want to do that. So please feel free to connect with us on socials as well if you want to leave feedback that way. If you're not doing so, you can already follow us at The Palace Way on X. You can also head to palaceway.com for all things Palace again with the brilliant articles that we're putting out. You can play our Joel Wardle game. You can check out a whole lot more there. So please get involved. We're trying to offer the full package for you as a listener, not just this podcast, but so much more too. Lastly, I want to say a big thank you for Bobby for your time again. Any closing thoughts from you, mate?
I hope I've been as underwhelming as people were expecting and the most underwhelming freelance football reporter out there. But if you want some more underwhelming content, then please sign up to my Substack. We've just started. We're up to, I think it's 100 subscribers now already, which is really great for a couple of days going. I'm going to endeavour to get an article out every week. Next one I'm thinking of is getting a transformation of Oliver Glasner on there, as in how he's transformed the club. The first one was obviously on Adam Walton and whether or not he should be in with an England chance. So yeah, I'd really appreciate it if people signed up to that and got my article straight into your inbox. The support means a lot, and just want to thank you to the Palace Way for giving me this platform to come on to talk again.
Yeah, always. I know you're not technically with us anymore, but you're always welcome, as you know. Do you want a little confession, Bobby?
Go on then.
I haven't actually subscribed to your Substack yet, so I don't know what I'm doing
Wow,
after
you
this
missed an
episode.
absolutely brilliant article, if I don't say so myself.
Humble, humble. So just like Dougie Freeman, I'm a massive snake now, apparently.
I
I
would
will be
never
pulling up
think of
to
making
I
those kind of jokes.
never, never, no. You can make it with me. Come on. Right. I will be pulling up in my jort. It's 22 degrees, so it is very much jort weather to Wolves away. I don't know if I've mentioned I'm going. I feel like I've flooded our group chat with asking about, but yeah, I'll very much be there. I'm
I will
looking
see
forward
you at
to it.
Molyneux then.
Oh, you'll be at the Molyneux.
I
See,
will
now
be
you're the
there.
snake, because I didn't know
I,
that.
for some reason, I go to most games. Not really sure why. But yeah,
Yeah, I'm a twin. If I'm a twin for the listeners who don't know as well, so there'll be two of me. So you're not too
oh,
pissed.
is
If you're seeing
Robert
four, you're
Jonesy
fine.
going as well?
He is, yeah. So if you're seeing four, you've had too many pints. If you're seeing two, you're all right. So we're looking forward to seeing you there. Right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your time, everyone. Thanks for listening, and up the Palace.
See you Saturday.